The recycled air in Slag's drinking hole carried the usual cocktail of promethium fumes, unwashed bodies, and something that might have once been food. I nursed my third cup of recaf, watching the dregs of the Rust Claw territory shuffle through their daily routines of petty violence and desperate survival. The Underhive never slept, but it had rhythms, and I'd learned to read them after 15 years of scavenging in these emperor-forsaken depths. Voss Ironhand had kept me waiting for 2 hours, which meant either the job was legitimate or he planned to have me gutted in the back room. The Rust Claw boss finally emerged from his private booth, his augmetic jaw clicking as he approached my table, his remaining organic eye fixed on me with the calculating stare of a man who'd clawed his way to power through the industrial sector's gang wars. The contract he laid before me was written on actual parchment, not the usual scrap metal or human skin the gangs favored for their territorial agreements. Voss explained the job with the careful precision of someone who'd already lost 3 teams to whatever waited in the depths. The Adeptus Mechanicus had abandoned a bioprocessing facility in the lower industrial sector decades ago, leaving behind specialized equipment worth more than most gangers saw in their entire miserable lives. The facility had been producing corpse starch for the Upper Hive's food distribution networks before some bureaucratic shuffle or resource reallocation had rendered it obsolete. The Sump Rats had claimed the territory around the facility, turning it into their primary stronghold. Voss had been negotiating with their leader, a psychotic brute called Meatgrinder Halk, for months about a joint salvage operation. 3 weeks ago, all communication had stopped. The Sump Rats' usual raids on neighboring territories had ceased, their lookouts had vanished from their established positions, and even their traditional challenges to passing scavengers had gone silent. I accepted the contract because the payment was substantial enough to buy my way off this rotting world, assuming I survived to collect it. Voss provided me with 3 team members from his stable of available muscle and specialists. The selection process had been pragmatic rather than friendly. These were tools for a job, not companions for a pleasure cruise through the Underhive's scenic industrial wasteland. Kine had served as an enforcer in the Midhive precincts before some unspecified incident had seen him cast down to the Underhive's permanent twilight. His flak armor still bore the faded insignia of the Adeptus Arbites, though he'd long since traded his shock maul for a stub gun and a collection of brutal-looking knives. The man moved with the disciplined efficiency of someone who'd spent years maintaining order in places where order was a luxury few could afford. Torvin claimed to be a former tech priest, though his augmetics were crude compared to the sophisticated implants I'd seen on legitimate members of the Adeptus Mechanicus. His left arm had been replaced with a mechanical limb that sparked occasionally, and his vocal cords had been modified with some kind of vox grill that made his voice sound like grinding metal. Whether he was truly a rogue member of the machine cult, or simply an Underhive tech right with delusions of grandeur, his knowledge of Imperial technology was extensive enough to make him valuable. Brass earned his name from the brass-plated respirator that covered the lower half of his face, a necessary modification after years of inhaling combat stims and industrial toxins had reduced his lungs to barely functional scar tissue. He carried a heavy stubber that looked like it had been assembled from scavenged parts and sheer bloody mindedness, along with enough ammunition to level a hab block. The man's hands shook constantly from chem withdrawal, but I'd seen him put 3 rounds through a target center mass from 50 meters while riding a stim high that should have killed him. We descended through the industrial sector's maze of abandoned manufactorums and corroded pipeline networks, following routes that had been carved through the Underhive structure by generations of desperate scavengers. The air grew thicker as we moved deeper, heavy with the metallic taste of oxidized machinery and the organic stench of things that had died in dark places and been left to rot. The Sump Rats' territory began at a junction where 3 major pipeline clusters converged, creating a natural choke point that the gang had fortified with razor wire, improvised gun nests, and the usual collection of severed heads mounted on spikes. The fortifications were intact, but empty. Fresh ammunition clips lay scattered around the defensive positions, as if the defenders had simply vanished in the middle of reloading their weapons. Torvin examined the abandoned positions with professional interest, his augmetic fingers probing the weapon emplacements and communication equipment. He reported that the defensive systems were still functional, their machine spirits intact and ready to respond to proper activation rituals. The abandonment had been sudden rather than planned. No one had bothered to perform the proper shutdown procedures or recover valuable equipment. We pushed deeper into Sump Rat territory, following the main access route toward the bioprocessing facility. The gang's territorial markers had been torn down or defaced, not by rival gangers, but by something that had shredded the metal plates and plasteel signs with what looked like enormous claws. The damage patterns were unlike anything I'd encountered in 15 years of underhive warfare. The walls of the access tunnels showed signs of some kind of organic growth, patches of glistening material that looked like fungal colonies or bacterial mats. The growths were concentrated around ventilation grills and moisture condensation points, spreading in irregular patterns that reminded me of infection vectors I'd seen in plague-struck hab blocks. Torvin took samples with his mechanical fingers, sealing them in specimen containers for later analysis. The silence was the most disturbing aspect of our advance. The underhive was never truly quiet. There were always the sounds of settling metal, distant machinery, scurrying vermin, and the constant background hum of the hive city's life support systems. Here, the usual audio landscape had been replaced by an oppressive quiet that seemed to absorb sound rather than simply lacking it. Our first sign of the Sump Rats came at what had been their primary checkpoint, a reinforced position guarding the approach to the bioprocessing facility. Bodies lay scattered around the defensive emplacement, but they weren't the usual casualties of gang warfare. The corpses had been torn apart with savage efficiency, limbs separated from torsos, and internal organs removed with surgical precision. The wounds showed no signs of Law's fire, stub rounds, or blade work. Something had simply reached into these men and pulled them apart. Brass examined the weapons scattered around the checkpoint, finding them fully loaded and unfired. Whatever had killed the Sump Rats had moved too quickly for them to mount any effective resistance. The heavy stubber emplacement was still loaded with a full ammunition belt, its targeting systems calibrated and ready for use. The bioprocessing facility loomed ahead of us, a massive structure of corroded plasteel and ceramite that had been built into the underhive supporting architecture. The Adeptus Mechanicus had constructed it to imperial standards, with redundant systems and defensive measures that had outlasted the bureaucrats who'd ordered its abandonment. Emergency lighting strips still functioned along the main approaches, casting sickly yellow illumination across surfaces that glistened with more of the organic growth we'd encountered in the access tunnels. The facility's main entrance had been breached, not by explosives or cutting tools, but by something that had simply torn through the reinforced doors as if they were made of parchment. Metal fragments lay scattered across the threshold, their edges showing the same claw-like scoring patterns we'd observed on the territorial markers. From somewhere deep within the facility's depths came a sound that made my skin crawl, a rhythmic mechanical humming that rose and fell in patterns that suggested machinery operating far beyond its design parameters. The sound was accompanied by something else, a wet organic noise that reminded me of meat being processed in industrial quantities. Torvin's augmetic sensors detected elevated levels of biological activity within the facility. Readings that suggested massive bacterial or viral colonies had established themselves in the structure's environmental systems. His mechanical voice reported atmospheric contamination levels that would require full environmental suits for extended exposure, though our basic respirators would provide adequate protection for a quick salvage operation. The specialized bioprocessing equipment we'd come to retrieve was located in the facility's central laboratorium complex, a journey that would take us through several levels of abandoned production areas and storage chambers. The original Adeptus Mechanicus layouts indicated multiple route options, but the facility's current condition made it impossible to predict which passages remained structurally sound. We entered the facility through the breached main entrance, our footsteps echoing in the vast reception area despite our attempts at stealth. The organic growths were more extensive here, covering entire wall sections and spreading across the floor in patterns that forced us to pick our way carefully through the contaminated areas, The growths pulsed with their own internal rhythm, as if responding to some unseen stimulus. The mechanical humming grew louder as we advanced, accompanied by new sounds that defied easy identification, grinding noises that might have been machinery or might have been something else entirely, and a constant background susurrus that sounded like whispered conversations in languages I didn't recognize. The reception area stretched before us like the maw of some industrial beast, its ceiling lost in shadows that our lumens couldn't penetrate. The organic growths had claimed most of the surfaces here, forming thick mats that squelched under our boots and released clouds of spores with each step. I kept my respirator sealed tight, but the smell still managed to seep through, a nauseating mixture of rotting protein and industrial chemicals that made my eyes water. Torvin's augmetic sensors swept the area continuously, their soft clicking sounds providing a counterpoint to the facility's mechanical humming. He gestured toward a service corridor that branched off from the main thoroughfare, indicating that his readings suggested it would lead us toward the sump rat's established living quarters. The gang had converted several of the facility's administrative sections into crude barracks and storage areas, using the existing infrastructure to support their operations while they systematically stripped anything valuable from the abandoned machinery. We followed the corridor deeper into the facility's heart, passing through areas where the Adeptus Mechanicus had once conducted their daily rituals of maintenance and oversight. Cogitator terminals lined the walls, their screens dark and lifeless, though Torvin noted that many still retained power. The machine spirits that governed the facility's basic functions continued their eternal vigil, waiting for tech priests who would never return to resume their sacred duties. The first sign of the sump rat's presence came at a junction where they'd established a checkpoint. Unlike the defensive positions we'd encountered outside, this area showed clear evidence of recent habitation. Sleeping rolls were scattered across the floor, still bearing the impressions of bodies that had rested there recently. Personal effects lay abandoned where they'd been dropped, ammunition clips, stim injectors, crude jewelry fashioned from scavenged metal, and the usual collection of trophies that gangers accumulated during their violent careers. What struck me most was the suddenness of the abandonment. Meals had been interrupted mid-consumption, leaving bowls of corpse starch gruel that were still warm to the touch. The protein paste had congealed into an unappetizing mass, but the thermal readings Torvin took indicated the food had been prepared within the last few hours. Steam still rose from several cups of ricaf, their contents barely touched. Brass examined the scattered weapons with professional interest, finding them loaded and ready for immediate use. The sump rats had been armed for serious combat when they'd fled this position, carrying heavy stubbers, Laz carbines, and enough explosives to breach reinforced barriers. Whatever had driven them from their stronghold had moved too quickly for them to mount any organized resistance. The living quarters revealed more disturbing details. Personal bunkers had been torn apart from the inside, their contents scattered as if the occupants had been searching desperately for something or trying to escape from something that had gotten inside with them. Clothing was shredded, not by blades or claws, but by something that had simply dissolved the fabric where it touched. Pools of the same viscous fluid we'd encountered in the access tunnels had collected in low spots, eating through the metal flooring and leaving irregular holes that descended into darkness. Torvin collected samples of the corrosive substance, sealing them in specialized containers designed to hold hazardous biological materials. His augmetic analysis systems worked constantly, processing the chemical composition and attempting to identify the source of the contamination. The readings he shared with us were deeply troubling. The fluid contained organic compounds that shouldn't exist outside of specialized laboratory environments, along with trace elements that suggested exposure to industrial bioprocessing equipment operating far beyond safe parameters. I found the first evidence of violence in what had been the gang's communal eating area. Bones were scattered across the floor, gnawed clean of meat, but showing bite patterns unlike anything I'd encountered in 15 years of underhive survival. The marks were too large for human teeth, too regular for the mutant vermin that infested the lower levels, and too precise for the crude implements gangers typically used to process their food. Something had been feeding here, and it had done so with methodical thoroughness. The walls around the eating area bore scratched messages in low Gothic, carved deep into the metal with what looked like fingernails or small claws. The warnings were crude but clear, references to hunger that consumed everything it touched, to faces that weren't faces anymore, to brothers who had become something else in the darkness below. The messages grew more frantic as they progressed, the handwriting deteriorating into barely legible scratches that spoke of desperation and mounting terror. Kine discovered additional evidence in the gang's weapon storage area. Ammunition crates had been torn open and their contents scattered, but not by looters seeking to steal valuable supplies. The scattering pattern suggested panic, as if someone had been desperately searching for specific types of rounds or explosive devices. Several crates contained specialized ammunition designed for dealing with heavily armored targets or mutant creatures, the kind of equipment gangers typically reserved for territorial wars or encounters with the Underhive's more dangerous predators. The most disturbing discovery came in what had been the gang leader's private quarters. Meatgrinder Halk had maintained a collection of trophies from his various conquests, severed heads, flayed skin sections, and other grisly mementos of his rise to power. The collection had been systematically destroyed, not by rival gangers seeking to dishonor his memory, but by something that had consumed the organic materials while leaving the metal fixtures untouched. Only bones remained, picked clean and showing the same unusual bite patterns we'd found in the eating area. Torvin's sensors detected massive bioelectrical activity emanating from the levels below us, readings that far exceeded anything normal human signatures could produce. The facility's main laboratorium complex lay deeper in the structure, connected to the living quarters by a series of maintenance shafts and service corridors that the sump rats had used to access the valuable equipment they'd been systematically stripping. The bioelectrical readings suggested that something in those depths was drawing enormous amounts of power from the facility's still functioning systems. We followed the gang's established route toward the laboratorium, passing through areas where the organic growths had spread across entire corridor sections. The material pulsed with visible veins that carried fluids of various colors, creating a nauseating display that reminded me of exposed circulatory systems. The growths responded to our presence, contracting slightly as we passed, and releasing more of the spore clouds that made breathing difficult even through our respirators. The service elevator the sump rats had used to reach the lower levels was still functional, though its control systems showed signs of recent tampering. Someone had overridden the safety protocols that normally prevented access to the facility's most dangerous areas, using crude but effective bypass techniques that spoke of desperate urgency. The elevator shaft descended into darkness that our lumens couldn't penetrate, disappearing into depths where the facility's original architects had housed their most sensitive equipment. As we prepared to descend, Brass spotted movement in one of the side corridors, a shambling figure that had once been human, but now defied easy classification. The thing that approached us retained the basic bipedal structure of a man, but its flesh had been transformed into something that resembled processed organic material more than living tissue. Sections of its body showed the telltale patterns of industrial bioprocessing, as if it had been partially digested and reconstituted by machinery designed to convert raw protein into consumable products. The creature's face was the most disturbing aspect of its transformation. Human features remained visible beneath layers of the same viscous material we'd found throughout the facility, but they had been rearranged in ways that suggested the bioprocessing equipment had attempted to optimize the facial structure for some unknown purpose. Eyes that had once been brown now glowed with the same sickly luminescence as the organic growths, and its mouth had been expanded to accommodate rows of teeth that looked more like industrial cutting implements than natural dentition. It moved with the jerky, unsteady gait of something that was learning to control limbs that no longer functioned according to human anatomy. The transformation had left it stronger than any normal person, as evidenced by the way it casually tore through a section of reinforced piping that blocked its path. The metal shrieked as it parted, leaving edges that glowed briefly from the heat generated by the creature's grip. The thing that had once been a sump rat ganger retained enough of its original memories to recognize us as intruders in its territory. It attempted to vocalize, producing sounds that might have been words if they hadn't been filtered through vocal cords that had been restructured by the same process that had transformed the rest of its anatomy. The noise it made was wet and mechanical, like the sound of industrial machinery processing organic materials. Torvin's sensors registered massive biological activity from the creature, readings that suggested its cellular structure was actively changing even as we observed it. The transformation wasn't complete, it was ongoing, with new growths appearing on its skin and existing features continuing to shift and adapt. Whatever process had created this abomination was still active, still working to convert human tissue into something else entirely. The facility's mechanical humming grew louder as the creature approached, as if its presence was somehow connected to the machinery operating in the depths below. The organic growths on the walls pulsed in rhythm with its movements, suggesting some kind of biological network that linked the transformed ganger to the larger contamination spreading throughout the structure. The transformed ganger lurched toward us with movements that defied human anatomy, its reconstructed limbs bending at angles that should have shattered bone. I raised my stub gun and put 3 rounds center mass, watching the impacts tear through flesh that immediately began sealing itself with strands of the same organic material coating the walls. The creature barely staggered from shots that would have dropped any normal human, its modified physiology absorbing damage through some grotesque healing process. Brass opened up with his heavy stubber, the sustained burst tearing chunks from the thing's torso and revealing internal structures that looked more like industrial machinery than human organs. Tubes and conduits ran through its chest cavity where lungs and heart should have been, pulsing with the same luminescent fluid we'd encountered throughout the facility. The creature's response was to emit a wet mechanical shriek that echoed through the corridors, answered by similar sounds from the depths below. Kine flanked the abomination while it focused on Brass's gunfire, driving his combat knife deep into what remained of its spine. The blade struck something that sparked and hissed, releasing a spray of corrosive fluid that ate through his flak armor's shoulder plate. The creature spun with inhuman speed, backhanding Kine across the corridor hard enough to dent the wall where he struck it. Torvin's augmetic arm extended toward the creature, releasing a burst of electrical discharge that caused its modified nervous system to convulse violently. The thing collapsed, twitching as its hybrid anatomy fought between organic reflexes and mechanical responses. We didn't wait to see if the effect was permanent, rushing past the fallen creature toward the service elevator that would take us deeper into the facility's core. The elevator descended through sections of the structure that had been completely overrun by the organic contamination. Through the cage's metal framework, I could see entire levels where the growths had consumed everything organic and begun incorporating metal components into their expanding mass. Pipes and conduits disappeared into fleshy matrices that pulsed with their own internal circulation systems, while support beams were wrapped in tendrils that seemed to be slowly dissolving the structural elements. The laboratorium level revealed the true scope of the contamination when the elevator doors opened. What had once been a sterile environment dedicated to bioprocessing and protein synthesis had become a nightmare landscape of living machinery and corrupted flesh. The original equipment remained partially intact, but it had been integrated into a sprawling organic network that defied any rational understanding of biology or technology. Massive bioprocessing vats dominated the central chamber, their transparisteel viewing ports revealing contents that moved with purposeful intelligence. The vats had been designed to convert raw organic matter into consumable protein products, but something had introduced a contaminant that had transformed the entire process into something far more sinister. The machinery continued its programmed functions, but instead of producing corpse starch, it was creating something that resembled living tissue organized into complex patterns. The contamination's source became apparent as we moved deeper into the laboratorium. Ancient xenological specimens that should have been properly disposed of according to imperial protocols had been stored in containment units that had failed decades ago. The specimens themselves were unrecognizable after years of decay, but the pathogen they had carried had survived and adapted to the facility's bioprocessing environment. Torvin's sensors detected massive biological activity throughout the chamber, readings that indicated the pathogen had not simply infected the machinery, but had formed a symbiotic relationship with it. The bioprocessing equipment was being directed by some form of distributed intelligence that coordinated the various systems toward purposes that had nothing to do with their original imperial functions. The floor of the laboratorium was covered in a thick mat of organic material that responded to our footsteps with visible ripples spreading outward from each point of contact. The surface felt solid enough to support our weight, but I could see movement beneath it, as if something large was shifting position in response to our presence. The air was thick with spores and organic particles that made breathing difficult even through our respirators. Brass moved toward one of the bioprocessing vats to examine its contents more closely, ignoring my hand signals to maintain distance from the contaminated equipment. The vat's contents had formed themselves into structures that resembled organs or tissue samples, but arranged in patterns that suggested deliberate organization rather than random growth. As he approached, the material inside the vat began moving more rapidly, pressing against the transparisteel as if trying to reach him. The pathogen's effect on Brass became apparent within minutes of his close approach to the contaminated bioslurry. His exposed skin began showing signs of cellular change, with patches of flesh taking on the same glistening quality as the organic growths throughout the facility. The transformation started at his hands, where he had made direct contact with fluid that had leaked from the vat's seals, but it spread rapidly up his arms toward his torso. What made the infection particularly horrifying was its interaction with his augmetic respirator and the metal components of his heavy stubber. The pathogen seemed to view organic and inorganic materials as equally suitable for integration, beginning a fusion process that merged his flesh with the brass plating of his breathing apparatus. His fingers began adhering to the stubber's grip, skin and metal flowing together in ways that defied both biology and engineering. Brass attempted to release his weapon, but the fusion had progressed too far for separation to be possible without tearing away significant portions of his hand. The pathogen was rewriting his cellular structure to incorporate metallic elements, creating hybrid tissue that combined the properties of living flesh with the durability of processed alloys. His respirator's brass plating began showing organic veining as the infection spread across its surface. The heavy stubber itself was being transformed by the pathogen's influence, its mechanical components taking on biological characteristics while retaining their basic functions. The weapon's ammunition feed system began pulsing like a circulatory system, and its barrel developed a texture that resembled living skin stretched over metal framework. The fusion between Brass and his weapon was creating something that was neither fully human nor purely mechanical. His attempts to vocalize his distress were muffled by the respirator, but I could see the panic in his eyes as he realized what was happening to him. The transformation was progressing faster than any normal infection, suggesting the pathogen had been specifically adapted to work with the facility's bioprocessing equipment. The contaminated environment was accelerating the fusion process, turning what might have been a gradual change into a rapid metamorphosis. Movement in the shadows around the laboratorium's perimeter caught my attention as shapes that had once been the facility's servitor population emerged from alcoves and maintenance stations. The servitors had been even more extensively transformed than the sump rat ganger we'd encountered above, their augmetic components providing more material for the pathogen to work with during the fusion process. These hybrid creatures retained the basic functions of their original servitor programming, but their purpose had been corrupted along with their physical forms. Instead of maintaining the facility's equipment, they now served as extensions of the pathogen's distributed intelligence, hunting through the laboratorium's maze of processing chambers for organic material to feed the growing contamination. Their augmetic limbs had been fused with pulsing organic matter that provided enhanced strength and flexibility, while their sensory equipment had been modified to detect the bioelectrical signatures of uninfected humans. The servitors moved with coordinated purpose, surrounding our position while maintaining the mechanical precision of their original programming, overlaid with predatory instincts that belonged to no imperial design. The largest of the transformed servitors had been a heavy maintenance unit, its industrial lifting arms now wrapped in organic sheaths that dripped corrosive fluid. Its optical sensors had been replaced with clusters of eyes that tracked our movements with disturbing intelligence, while its vox grille had been modified to produce sounds that served as communication with the other hybrid creatures. Kine positioned himself to cover our retreat toward the elevator, but the servitors had already moved to block that route. Their coordination suggested they were operating under the direction of some central intelligence that understood tactical deployment and resource management. The pathogen had not simply infected them. It had improved their operational efficiency for purposes that served its own agenda rather than their original imperial functions. Torvin's analysis of the situation became increasingly urgent as his sensors detected the pathogen spreading through the air around us. The spore concentration had reached levels that would overwhelm our respirator filters within minutes, meaning we were all at risk of infection regardless of direct contact with contaminated surfaces. The entire laboratorium had become a breeding ground for the xenological pathogen, with every surface serving as a potential vector for transmission. The realization that we had been deliberately sent into this contaminated facility struck me as I observed the servitors' coordinated behavior. The Rust Claw gang had known about the pathogen's presence and had deliberately chosen us as test subjects for whatever heretical experiments they were conducting. Our supposed salvage mission had been a cover for exposing us to the contamination and observing the results. Voss Ironhand's careful selection of team members made more sense in this context. He had chosen individuals with specific augmetic modifications and combat experience to provide the pathogen with different types of organic and mechanical material to work with. We were not salvage specialists, but unwitting participants in a study of how the xenological contamination interacted with various forms of imperial technology and human physiology. The facility's continued operation, despite its abandonment by the Adeptus Mechanicus, now appeared to be the result of deliberate maintenance by the Rust Claw gang, who had been using it as a laboratory for their own purposes. The bioprocessing equipment had been kept functional not for legitimate protein synthesis, but to provide an environment where the pathogen could be studied and potentially weaponized for use against rival gangs. The pathogen's influence on Brass accelerated beyond anything I had witnessed in the upper levels. His flesh rippled with visible changes as the contamination spread through his circulatory system, transforming muscle tissue into something that resembled processed protein while maintaining its basic structural functions. The heavy stubber fused to his hands had become an extension of his transformed anatomy, its ammunition feed system now pulsing in rhythm with his modified heartbeat. Kine's behavior had grown increasingly erratic since our descent into the laboratorium. He kept glancing at the shadows between the bioprocessing vats, muttering about voices that called to him from the depths of the facility. His movements had taken on a predatory quality that reminded me of the transformed servitors stalking through the chamber's periphery. The spore concentration was affecting his mind, introducing thoughts and impulses that belonged to the pathogen rather than his human consciousness. I watched Kine's deterioration with growing alarm as he began responding to stimuli that existed only in his contaminated perception. He would suddenly turn toward empty sections of the laboratorium, his hand moving to his weapons as if preparing to engage threats that I could not detect. His pupils had dilated to the point where his eyes appeared completely black, and the veins in his neck showed the same luminescent quality as the organic growths covering the facility's surfaces. The breaking point came when Kine approached one of the larger bioprocessing vats and began attempting to interface with its control systems. His movements were no longer entirely his own, guided by the pathogen's influence toward actions that served its agenda rather than our survival. He worked at the vat's access panel with fevered intensity, bypassing safety protocols with techniques that exceeded his normal technical knowledge. Torvin's condition had deteriorated in a different direction. His augmetic systems were interacting with the pathogen in ways that enhanced rather than resisted the contamination. The mechanical components of his body were serving as conduits for the xenological organism, allowing it to interface directly with his neural pathways and modify his thought processes. His understanding of imperial technology was being corrupted, rewritten to serve purposes that had nothing to do with the Omnissiah's teachings. The former tech priest had begun viewing the contamination as a form of blessed union between flesh and machine, a revelation that transcended the limitations of pure human understanding. His augmetic sensors were feeding him data that painted the pathogen's influence as beneficial rather than destructive, showing him patterns and connections that existed only in his infected perception. The machine spirits he communed with were no longer the sacred intelligences of imperial technology, but something far more alien and malevolent. Torvin moved toward the facility's main cogitator cluster with the same fevered intensity that had driven Kine to the bioprocessing controls. His mechanical fingers worked at interface ports that had been modified by the pathogen's influence, establishing connections that allowed the contamination to spread directly into the facility's data networks. The cogitators responded to his touch with displays that showed biological patterns rather than standard imperial data formats. The pathogen was using Torvin's technical knowledge to expand its influence throughout the facility's systems, gaining access to environmental controls, power distribution networks, and communication arrays. Through the infected cogitators, it could coordinate the activities of the transformed servitors and direct the growth of organic matter throughout the structure. The facility was becoming a single massive organism with the pathogen as its controlling intelligence. Kine's transformation reached a critical threshold as the bioprocessing vat he had been manipulating began responding to his infected neural patterns. The vat's contents surged against the transperisteel viewing port with increasing violence, as if recognizing him as a compatible host for whatever process was occurring within. The organic matter inside had organized itself into structures that resembled digestive systems, complete with chambers designed to break down and process biological material. His attempt to feed me to the growing flesh mass came without warning. The pathogen's influence had completely overridden his human consciousness, leaving only the predatory instincts that served the contamination's need for fresh organic material. He turned toward me with movements that were too fluid for normal human anatomy, his joints bending at angles that should have caused crippling pain. The combat knife in his hand had been modified by the same process that was transforming his body, its metal blade now showing organic veining that pulsed with the pathogen's characteristic luminescence. The weapon had become a living extension of his infected flesh, responding to his neural commands with enhanced speed and precision. When he lunged at me, the blade moved through the air with a whistle that sounded almost like breathing. I managed to dodge his initial attack, but the confined space of the laboratorium gave me little room to maneuver. The organic matter covering the floor had grown thicker during our time in the chamber, creating a surface that shifted and moved beneath my feet. Each step sent ripples through the contaminated material, and I could feel something large stirring in the depths below the visible surface. Kine's infected state had enhanced his physical capabilities beyond normal human limits. His movements were faster than they should have been. His strength increased to the point where his strikes left dents in the metal surfaces they contacted. The pathogen had optimized his muscular system for predatory efficiency, turning him into a hunting organism designed to capture and process prey for the facility's growing biomass. The fight that followed was brutal and desperate. Kine's enhanced reflexes allowed him to anticipate my movements with disturbing accuracy, as if the pathogen was feeding him information about my intentions before I was fully conscious of them myself. His attacks came in coordinated patterns that suggested tactical knowledge beyond his normal training, guided by an intelligence that understood combat in ways that transcended human experience. I managed to get behind him during one of his lunges, wrapping my arm around his throat in a chokehold that should have rendered him unconscious within seconds. Instead, his infected physiology adapted to the reduced oxygen flow, his modified circulatory system rerouting blood through pathways that bypassed the compressed arteries. He threw me off with strength that sent me crashing into one of the bioprocessing vats hard enough to crack the transperisteel. The impact with the vat's surface sent spider web fractures through the viewing port, allowing some of the contaminated fluid inside to leak onto the floor. The organic matter within immediately began spreading across the laboratorium's surface, seeking contact with any available biological material. The substance moved with purposeful direction rather than simple fluid dynamics, flowing toward our position with clear predatory intent. Kine's final assault came as he attempted to drive me into the spreading contamination, his infected consciousness recognizing the fluid as a tool for completing my transformation. The pathogen wanted to preserve my biological material for processing rather than simply destroying it through violence. His attacks were designed to incapacitate rather than kill, leaving me conscious but helpless as the contamination claimed my body. I drew my stub gun and put 3 rounds into his center mass at point-blank range. The impact staggered him but failed to stop his advance, his modified physiology absorbing damage that would have killed any normal human. The pathogen had restructured his internal organs to provide redundancy and enhanced healing capabilities, making him far more resilient than his original human form. The killing blow came when I managed to get my hands on a piece of broken metal from the damaged vat. The jagged edge found the gap between his modified ribs, piercing through to whatever remained of his heart. The pathogen's influence couldn't compensate for complete destruction of his primary circulation system, and he collapsed as his hybrid anatomy finally succumbed to catastrophic damage. Kine's death throes were accompanied by a sound that came from the contaminated bioprocessing equipment rather than his own throat. The pathogen was using the facility's Vox systems to express its reaction to losing a valuable host, producing a mechanical wail that echoed through the laboratorium's chambers. The organic growths on the walls pulsed with increased intensity, as if the entire structure was responding to the loss of one of its extensions. Torvin's interaction with the infected cogitators had reached a critical stage during my fight with Kine. His augmetic systems were now fully integrated with the pathogen's distributed intelligence, allowing him to access data networks that existed partially in the facility's machinery and partially in the biological contamination itself. The information he was receiving painted a picture of the pathogen's true scope and intentions that went far beyond simple survival and reproduction. The xenological organism had been using the facility's bioprocessing equipment to conduct experiments on the captured sump rats, testing different approaches to human modification and integration. The results of these experiments were stored in the infected cogitators as biological data patterns rather than traditional imperial records. Torvin's corrupted understanding of the Omnissiah's teachings led him to interpret this information as sacred knowledge rather than heretical contamination. His attempts to interface directly with the facility's main processing systems triggered a response from the pathogen that had been building throughout our time in the laboratorium. The massive biomechanical entity that had been growing in the facility's depths began moving toward the surface, drawn by the promise of fresh organic material and the opportunity to expand its influence beyond the confines of the abandoned Adeptus Mechanicus structure. The entity's approach was heralded by vibrations that shook the entire laboratorium level, causing the bioprocessing vats to crack and release their contaminated contents across the chamber floor. The organic matter that had been contained within the equipment began flowing together, forming streams of living tissue that moved with coordinated purpose toward drainage systems and ventilation shafts that connected to the broader underhive infrastructure. Through the facility's surveillance systems, I caught glimpses of the entity itself as it moved through the lower levels. The thing had consumed dozens of gangers and servitors during its growth phase, incorporating their biological material into a form that defied easy description. It retained recognizable human elements, faces that emerged from its surface before being reabsorbed, limbs that functioned as manipulator appendages, organs that pulsed with visible circulation patterns, but these components had been integrated into something far larger and more complex. The entity's movement toward the facility's ventilation systems represented a threat that extended far beyond our immediate survival. The pathogen was preparing to spread throughout the underhive's atmospheric networks, using the interconnected air circulation systems to contaminate entire hab blocks and industrial sectors. The transformation that had claimed the sump rats and the facility's servitor population would spread to every human settlement within the contaminated air flow. Torvin's corrupted understanding of Imperial technology had led him to assist the pathogen's expansion by providing it with access to the facility's environmental controls. Through the infected cogitators, the entity could manipulate air pressure systems, filtration networks, and circulation fans to optimize the distribution of its spores throughout the underhive. The Adeptus Mechanicus had built the facility's systems to Imperial standards, with connections to the broader hive city infrastructure that would allow the contamination to spread far beyond its original containment. My discovery of the facility's thermal purge system came through desperate exploration of the control panels that Torvin had not yet corrupted with his infected interface attempts. The ancient Imperial failsafe had been designed to sterilize the entire structure in the event of catastrophic contamination, using superheated plasma to incinerate any biological material within the facility's confines. The system required manual activation from the main control chamber, with safeguards that prevented remote operation to ensure that only authorized personnel could trigger the purge sequence. The thermal purge represented the only way to stop the pathogen's spread, but activating it would trap me inside the facility as it became a crematorium. The system's design included lockdown protocols that sealed all exits during the purge sequence, preventing contaminated material from escaping while the plasma incineration was in progress. The temperature inside the facility would reach levels that would vaporize organic matter within minutes, leaving nothing but sterile ash and molten metal. The entity's approach to the ventilation systems was accelerating as it detected my presence in the control chamber. The pathogen's distributed intelligence recognized the threat I represented to its expansion plans, directing its hybrid servitors and organic growths to prevent me from reaching the thermal purge controls. The facility's corridors filled with contaminated tissue that moved with predatory intent, seeking to capture and process me before I could trigger the sterilization sequence. Torvin's final corruption came as he attempted to interface with the thermal purge system itself, his infected consciousness viewing the sterilization protocols as another form of sacred union between flesh and machine. The pathogen was using his technical knowledge to subvert the failsafe systems, attempting to turn the facility's own defenses into tools for its expansion rather than containment. His augmetic fingers worked at control interfaces with fevered intensity, rewriting safety protocols to serve the contamination's agenda. The race to reach the thermal purge activation controls became a desperate struggle through corridors that were actively trying to prevent my passage. The organic matter covering the facility's surfaces had developed primitive sensory capabilities, detecting my movement and directing obstacles into my path. Walls contracted to narrow passages, floors became treacherous with pools of corrosive fluid, and ceiling sections dropped contaminated growths that sought to make contact with my exposed skin. The facility's corridors had become a living maze of predatory flesh as I fought my way toward the thermal purge controls. Every surface writhed with organic matter that responded to my presence with disturbing intelligence, contracting passages and extending grasping appendages that sought to drag me into digestive chambers hidden within the walls themselves. The pathogen had transformed the entire structure into an extension of its hybrid anatomy, turning maintenance shafts and ventilation ducts into circulatory systems that pulsed with contaminated fluids. My respirator's filters were failing as the spore concentration reached levels that overwhelmed their capacity. Each breath brought more of the xenological contamination into my lungs, and I could feel the first stages of cellular change beginning in my throat and nasal passages. The metallic taste of corrupted air mixed with the organic stench of digesting protein, creating a nauseating combination that made every inhalation a struggle against my body's natural rejection of the poisoned atmosphere. The walls themselves had developed primitive sensory organs that tracked my movement through the facility's maze of interconnected chambers. Clusters of eyes emerged from the organic growths at regular intervals, their pupils dilating and contracting as they focused on my position. The visual information was being processed by the pathogen's distributed intelligence, allowing it to coordinate attacks from multiple directions while I struggled to find a route to the control chamber. Torvin's corrupted form had become something that defied easy description, his augmetic components fused with organic matter in ways that created new categories of abomination. His mechanical limbs had been wrapped in pulsing tissue that enhanced their strength while maintaining their precision, turning his fingers into surgical instruments capable of interfacing with both imperial technology and biological systems. The Vox grill that had once allowed him to speak now produced sounds that served as communication nodes for the pathogen's network. His attempts to corrupt the thermal purge system had partially succeeded before I reached the control chamber. Several of the failsafe protocols had been rewritten to serve the contamination's agenda, turning sterilization procedures into distribution mechanisms that would spread the pathogen through the facility's atmospheric connections to the broader underhive. The plasma incineration system had been modified to operate at reduced temperatures, creating conditions that would aerosolize the contamination rather than destroying it. The control chamber itself had been transformed into a nerve center for the pathogen's operations, with organic growths covering every surface and extending tendrils into the cogitator systems that governed the facility's functions. The massive biomechanical entity that had been growing in the depths was now directly connected to these systems, using them to coordinate its expansion throughout the underhive's infrastructure networks. Through the facility's surveillance feeds, I could see the entity's true form as it moved through the lower levels toward the ventilation systems. The thing had incorporated dozens of human bodies into its structure, their faces emerging from its surface in expressions of perpetual agony before being reabsorbed into the greater mass. Arms and legs functioned as manipulator appendages, while organs that had once belonged to individual victims now served specialized functions within the entity's hybrid anatomy. The creature's movement through the facility's corridors left behind streams of contaminated fluid that immediately began seeking new organic material to process. The biomechanical hybrid was not simply consuming the structure's remaining resources, but actively converting them into extensions of itself, turning metal support beams into skeletal frameworks wrapped in living tissue, and transforming electrical conduits into nervous system pathways that carried the pathogen's commands throughout the facility. My approach to the thermal purge controls triggered a defensive response from the entity that demonstrated the full scope of its capabilities. The facility's atmospheric systems began cycling contaminated air at accelerated rates, filling the control chamber with spore concentrations that would complete my transformation within minutes. The organic growths on the walls extended toward me with predatory intent, their surfaces secreting digestive enzymes that could dissolve human tissue on contact. Torvin's hybrid form positioned itself between me and the purge activation controls, his corrupted consciousness recognizing the threat I represented to the pathogen's expansion plans. His augmetic systems had been enhanced by the contamination, providing him with reflexes and strength that exceeded normal human capabilities. The mechanical precision of his movements had been replaced by fluid grace that belonged to predatory organisms rather than imperial technology. The confrontation in the control chamber became a desperate struggle against an opponent who combined the worst aspects of both organic and mechanical threats. Torvin's corrupted augmetics allowed him to interface directly with the facility's systems, turning environmental controls and security measures into weapons that he could deploy against me. Blast doors slammed shut to block my retreat routes, while atmospheric processors flooded the chamber with increasingly toxic concentrations of contaminated air. His physical attacks came with the enhanced strength of his modified limbs, each strike capable of denting metal surfaces and shattering bone. The pathogen had optimized his muscular system for combat efficiency, providing him with the ability to deliver devastating blows while maintaining the surgical precision needed to incapacitate rather than kill. The contamination wanted to preserve my biological material for processing, not destroy it through excessive violence. I managed to reach the thermal purge controls despite his attempts to prevent my access, but the activation sequence had been corrupted by his earlier interface attempts. The system required manual override procedures that would take precious minutes to complete, while the contaminated atmosphere continued to affect my respiratory system. My vision was beginning to blur as the pathogen's spores found purchase in my bloodstream, introducing foreign genetic material that sought to rewrite my cellular structure. The entity's approach to the facility's main ventilation shaft created vibrations that shook the entire structure, causing support beams to groan under stresses they had never been designed to withstand. Through the control chamber's viewing ports, I could see sections of the creature's massive form as it moved through corridors that were too small to contain its full bulk. The thing was reshaping the facility's internal architecture to accommodate its passage, dissolving walls and floors that blocked its path while reinforcing areas that served its purposes. My hands worked frantically at the thermal purge controls as Torvin's corrupted form launched another assault, his mechanical fingers seeking to tear away the interface panels before I could complete the activation sequence. The pathogen's influence had enhanced his technical knowledge to inhuman levels, allowing him to understand the facility's systems in ways that exceeded the original Adeptus Mechanicus designs. His attempts to sabotage the purge sequence demonstrated capabilities that belonged to tech priests of the highest rank rather than the crude, augmetic right he had claimed to be. The realization that the contamination would spread throughout the Underhive's water recycling systems came through visions that the pathogen itself was feeding into my infected consciousness. The entity's connection to the facility's environmental networks had revealed the full scope of the infrastructure that connected this abandoned structure to the broader Hive City. Contaminated fluids were already flowing through drainage systems that led to processing plants serving millions of inhabitants in the mid-Hive levels. The pathogen's expansion plans extended far beyond simple survival and reproduction. The xenological organism had been using the facility's bioprocessing equipment to develop specialized strains of contamination designed for different environments and target populations. The water recycling systems would carry versions optimized for aquatic transmission, while atmospheric networks would distribute airborne variants that could survive in the Hive City's diverse environmental conditions. The scope of the threat became clear as the visions showed me contaminated water reaching hab blocks throughout the mid-Hive, transforming entire populations into extensions of the pathogen's distributed intelligence. The entity's hybrid servants would spread through the Hive City's transportation networks, seeking new sources of organic material while establishing processing centers in abandoned structures and maintenance areas. Within months, the contamination would reach the upper Hive levels, threatening even the planetary nobility and imperial administration. My determination to trigger the thermal purge system solidified as I witnessed the potential consequences of allowing the pathogen to escape its current containment. The facility's sterilization protocols represented the only way to prevent a catastrophe that would consume the entire Hive City and potentially spread to other worlds through trade routes and transportation networks. The Emperor's servants had faced similar threats throughout the galaxy's history, and their response had always been the same, complete eradication through whatever means necessary. The thermal purge activation sequence required biometric confirmation from authorized personnel, a security measure that should have prevented unauthorized access to the facility's most destructive capabilities. However, the pathogen's corruption of the system had created vulnerabilities that I could exploit through direct interface with the damaged control panels. My hands found the manual override switches that would bypass the biometric locks, though completing the sequence would require maintaining contact with the electrical systems as the plasma incineration began. Torvin's final assault came as he realized my intentions and attempted to prevent the thermal purge activation through direct physical intervention. His corrupted form launched itself across the control chamber with inhuman speed, his mechanical limbs seeking to tear me away from the override controls before I could complete the sequence. The pathogen's influence had enhanced his desperation, driving him to take risks that his original programming would never have permitted. The struggle that followed was brief but violent. Torvin's augmetic strength allowed him to inflict significant damage despite my attempts to defend myself, his mechanical fingers leaving deep gouges in my flak armor as he sought to reach the vital organs beneath. The pathogen wanted to preserve my biological material, but its hybrid servant was willing to cause substantial harm, if necessary, to prevent the facility's destruction. I managed to complete the thermal purge activation sequence, even as Torvin's corrupted form wrapped its mechanical limbs around my torso in a final attempt to drag me away from the controls. The facility's plasma incineration system responded to the manual override with a deep harmonic vibration that indicated the charging of massive energy capacitors. Emergency lighting strips began flashing in patterns that warned of imminent atmospheric sterilization, while blast doors sealed all exits to prevent contaminated material from escaping during the purge sequence. The entity's reaction to the thermal purge activation was immediate and violent. The massive biomechanical hybrid abandoned its approach to the ventilation systems and began moving toward the control chamber with desperate urgency, its distributed intelligence recognizing the threat to its existence. The facility's corridors filled with organic matter as the creature attempted to reach me before the sterilization sequence could complete, but the blast doors and security barriers held against its assault. Torvin's hybrid form released me as the pathogen's network began shutting down, the distributed intelligence that had coordinated the contamination's activities fragmenting as the thermal purge system's energy fields began affecting the organic matter throughout the facility. His corrupted consciousness flickered between the alien intelligence that had claimed him and fragments of his original human personality, creating a brief moment of clarity before the pathogen's influence reasserted itself. The fusion of Torvin's remains with the facility's main cogitator created a final abomination that combined the worst aspects of corrupted technology and biological contamination. His mechanical components had become fully integrated with the pathogen's organic networks, turning him into a living interface between the entity's distributed intelligence and the imperial systems it sought to corrupt. The hybrid consciousness that resulted spoke in binary cant, mixed with organic sounds that resembled screams more than communication. The thermal purge system's charging sequence filled the facility with energy discharges that caused the organic growths to convulse and retreat from the metal surfaces they had claimed. The pathogen's biological components could not withstand the electromagnetic fields generated by the plasma incineration system, forcing the contamination to concentrate in areas that provided some protection from the mounting energy levels. The entity's massive form contracted as it sought to preserve its core functions, while the facility's atmosphere became increasingly hostile to organic matter. My final moments in the control chamber were spent watching the thermal purge system's displays as they showed the sterilization sequence approaching completion. The plasma incineration would begin within minutes, raising the facility's internal temperature to levels that would vaporize any biological material within the structure. The pathogen's desperate attempts to escape through the sealed ventilation systems were failing as the blast doors held against its assault, trapping the contamination within the facility's confines. The Emperor's mercy came in the form of acceptance, as I realized that my sacrifice would prevent the pathogen from spreading throughout the underhive and beyond. The thermal purge system would cleanse the facility of the xenological contamination, reducing both the entity and its hybrid servants to sterile ash that posed no threat to the Imperium's citizens. My death would serve the Emperor's will by containing a threat that could have consumed entire worlds if allowed to escape. The plasma incineration began with a flash of light that overwhelmed my vision, followed by heat that consumed everything organic within the facility's structure. The pathogen screams echoed through the Vox systems as the contamination was systematically destroyed, its distributed intelligence fragmenting as the organic networks that supported it were reduced to constituent atoms. The entity's massive form dissolved in the superheated atmosphere, its hybrid components separating into their original elements before being vaporized completely. My final prayer to the Emperor was a simple request for forgiveness for the heretical contamination I had witnessed, and the knowledge I had gained of things that should not exist within the Imperium's borders. The thermal purge consumed my body along with the pathogen's remains, leaving only ash and the Emperor's mercy in the depths of the Underhive, where the abandoned facility had become a tomb for threats that could have destroyed worlds. The facility's sterilization was complete within minutes, the plasma incineration system reducing everything organic to sterile particles that posed no threat to the surrounding Underhive infrastructure. The pathogen's plans for expansion through the water recycling systems died with its destruction, leaving the Hive City's population safe from a contamination that would have transformed them into extensions of an alien intelligence. The Emperor's protection had prevailed through the sacrifice of those willing to pay the ultimate price for the Imperium's security. In the aftermath of the thermal purge, only silence remained in the depths where the bioprocessing facility had once operated. The organic growths that had claimed the structure's surfaces were gone, reduced to ash that would eventually be filtered out through the Underhive's atmospheric processing systems. The entity that had consumed dozens of gangers and servitors was no more, its hybrid consciousness extinguished along with the pathogen that had created it. The Emperor's mercy had cleansed the facility of corruption, leaving only the eternal vigilance that protected humanity from the horrors that lurked in the galaxy's darkest corners.